Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good afternoon and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Mary Van Doren, your host of our series, Heartfelt Horizons. In this series, we will be highlighting remarkable efforts of nonprofits across the world. To kick off our series, our show topic today is Growing Good. We thought it'd be appropriate to kick off this series with an introduction into what it takes to start and operate a successful nonprofit and what for-profit companies can learn from them. And our leading lady today is someone who is highly qualified to tell us. I'd like to introduce to you Catherine Donatia. A little bit about Catherine. I can't even go through her whole bio in this time, but she is a co-founder and president CEO of Growing Good, Inc., a professional service company firm that partners with nonprofit organizations and companies who aim to do good in the world. Catherine has previously held key C-suite executive positions and board of director and advisory positions for organizations in the areas of research, higher education, and across the nonprofit sector, tackling complex social issues from healthcare, education, diversity, and gender equity, microfinance, green technology, and food insecurity. She's lived and worked on 5 continents, earned her PhD in social science and comparative education from UCLA, and has led and conducted research on media and technology as it relates to health issues around the globe. She has been a keynote speaker at several international and domestic conferences. And not only on all these things that she's talked about and is such an expert in, she also talks about women executives in the workplace, redefining success, and work-life balance as a professional and mother. Please help me welcome to the show our guest, Catherine Donatia.
Hi, thanks for having me. That was a mouthful. It's always kind of surreal when people talk about your life and, you know, what you've done. But I always tell people I'm a mom, and I kind of do other things, too, that I believe in. So,
well, comes from a long history there. For somebody, it sounds like you're probably like 85, and I know you're not even half that. So you've really been very well accomplished. And you and I met the other day, and we had a real nice conversation. You talked about some of the things that led you to where you are today. Would you take just a minute and kind of go back to some of your experiences that you've worked through, lived through over before getting to where you are today? So people have an idea of you've really been in the trenches to know what it takes to build a great nonprofit. So kind of give us a little bit of history. I'd appreciate it.
Sure. So I always call myself the, like, accidental entrepreneur, right? I started my career in academia. I thought I was going to be a professor, work on research, kind of do the academic route. And that's what I started as since basically school started, right? That was a goal. I was going to be a doctor for a while, as any good Asian American child was going to be, and then realized I didn't really want to be a doctor and had a little bit of a crisis. And then it's like, okay, I'll be a professor. And so I went into research, and it was, my research was always much more action-oriented focused. I did a lot of work abroad in very difficult environments and areas, with a lot of poverty, a lot of security risks. There was a lot of international security safety issues. And I worked a lot with populations that were disenfranchised or had difficulties accessing adequate health care. And I was really interested, I was always kind of a tech geek, so I was always interested in how can we especially reach kids and teenagers through the uses of technology to help them with their health. And I had a lot of profound experiences. I did a lot of HIV counseling early in the 90s. I worked with a lot of commercial sex workers or kids who had been trafficked over into commercial sex work, especially abroad in Southeast Asia. And I worked with out of school and a lot of homeless youth or housing insecure youth in Western Africa. So it was really an intense experience early on in my career. And when I got married, there were a lot of situations where my life had been in danger, my safety had been in danger. I got sick multiple times with things like malaria. It was a lot. And there were times when there were, you know, gunpoint held at different points for access to certain areas that were really unsafe. And so my husband and I had a conversation. I'd been gone for 12 months out of the, 9 months out of the first 12 months of our marriage doing data collection. And he's like, you know, if you want to continue to do this, this is probably not conducive to having a family. And that's when I pivoted and went into administration, became an assistant dean, did a lot of research management, not conducting as much research. And after that, I pivoted again and I left and became the head of a very large nonprofit. I was the COO and ran our scientific portfolio on research for a very large cancer research organization that funded hundreds of millions of dollars and had multiple corporate partnerships and was a official charity for a large professional sports league. So it was very different. I've had a lot of experiences all over the place in terms of nonprofit, from being a researcher who applied for grants to managing grants and restructuring research for like a tier one research institution, high university, to then running a nonprofit and then being a funder. So I've kind of had like the broad scope of experience. And now I get to do a lot more fun things that are varied and different. I think it's just me being kind of curious and always wanting to learn. During the pandemic, my personal situation changed. I had some health issues. My kids were really young. They were homeschooled. I have twins. And they were in first grade, and now I have a bunch of kids, you know, two kids at home, and I'm trying to recover from a medical issue. And so I was like, well, I think I'm going to take a break from work, and I'm just going to focus on family. And the next day after basically parting ways with my job, I got a phone call like 2 days later from a colleague. He's like, I have a consulting gig for you. Do you want to do it? It's like, okay. I don't know. But it ended up being setting up a U.S. nonprofit for a $500 million cancer research initiative that was a partnership between Cancer Research UK and the National Cancer Institutes here in the U.S. It was setting up their U.S. fundraising nonprofit. So I basically became an accidental entrepreneur because I had to start a business, and that's what my husband says because he's like the finance guy. And since then, I've been working with multiple groups and nonprofits and also for-profit companies that benefit the social good, because I don't think soul-wise it's good for me to work with people who for products and organizations I don't believe in. So we focus specifically on the nonprofit and for-profit sector that has benefits to the social good. And so that's kind of where I've been. And since then, we've helped dozens of nonprofits and dozens of companies with their strategy. Being a jack of all trades, I don't love that term. I think I'm more like a Swiss Army knife because I've had so many. I really focus on helping our company looks at meeting the client where they're at and really looking at holistic solutions. So we do a lot of fundraising strategy and support, but we also look at, does it align with your operations? From a funder perspective, is your pitch compelling? Is your proposal compelling? Do you have a true business plan to make your organization sustainable? It's not just about the one-off donation. It's really about creating organizations that are sustainable and scalable. So that's kind of where we're at.
Well, and that leads into two questions I had for you. The first one was, if your people are thinking of starting a nonprofit because there's a cause or a mission that they're really passionate about. I had heard once before, they said, before you do that, I think there's like over a million nonprofits in the United States alone. And this, our broadcast is worldwide. So we have listeners across the world, across the globe, excuse me. But when they are listening and they're thinking, well, I want to start a nonprofit, I had heard before, maybe you should look locally or at least within your country, your state or what have you, for a similar that maybe you can work with, like you can partner with instead of starting from your own. How many of the nonprofits that start out actually end up being successful long term?
Well, according to the National Center for Charity Statistics, which is quasi-governmental, 30% of all nonprofits close within their first 10 years. So they're not, and I'm sure the number is actually higher. Because we don't always track everything very well. But I think the issue here is I always tell founders, like people who have an idea or people who really believe in a cause that matters to them, do you have, I say I'm in the business of asking questions. I ask really good questions. I think that's what I get paid to do. And I always ask, do you have a plan and a point of view? And I'm trying to get from them is you can have the biggest heart and you can have the greatest idea, but if you don't actually have a true plan, like a business plan that talks about how you're going to get money, who is your audience, who are you serving, who are your donors, right? And in, we bring it into business speak, who are your consumers? What part of the market are you going to be satisfying? What is the problem you're addressing? And what is your true value proposition? Like, why are you special, right? What is it about your organization and your work that is going to be compelling to enough people to support that work so that you can be sustainable? And that takes a lot of thought, a lot of time, a lot of business acumen in a lot of ways, because you have to be able to see how are you going to raise money, right? And yes, you're not trying to make money as a nonprofit, but you still have to pay those bills, right? Mm-hmm. There's the utilities. You ideally like to pay people. You know, most people don't like to work for free. You might get some volunteers, but everybody can't be volunteering forever. There's just company and organizational fees. Like, people don't realize that nonprofits are one of the most heavily regulated industries, and people don't understand, like, if you are a nonprofit and you're fundraising in like 43 states and territories, you can't fundraise unless you register with that state, and you can't just stick a donate button on your website because that actually violates regulatory requirements if it's being shown all over the country and people are able to donate, and people don't realize that, right? And registration costs money. You're going to register everywhere in the U.S. It's like tens of thousands of dollars. So there's a lot of expense that's related. There's a lot of regulatory requirements that are related. And then at the end of the day, what is the true benefit that you're going to bring to your cause, right? If you start making a certain level of money, there's also like auditing and IRS requirements and all of these other things. So there's a lot of pieces that I always tell people, like, do you have a true plan? And it's not just, I want to do good in the world. I mean, like, that's lovely. But at the end of the day, a nonprofit is a type of business. And so you have to have a plan. And then the second part of that is, do you have a point of view, right? Do you know what it is you want to build, right? Because there's a lot of models out there. You can be, you know, I am going to be the nonprofit that's going to go out and get like the $5, $10 donations. That takes a lot of work because remember, because you're giving them a tax break, you have to receipt all of those and account for all of those people. So if you have like 100, 1,000 donors that are giving you $5, that's a lot of work,
yeah.
Right? Or
yeah.
Are you going to try to do something bigger where you're getting grants and foundations and private philanthropy and large-scale donors? that has its own issues, right? Whether you're, do you have the infrastructure to steward those relationships, to manage that type of accounting? All of these things matter, but you also have to have a point of view of who you can take money from. You take money from everybody, or like certain companies, there might be controversy which could affect how people view you. So having a point of view is really important. Having a plan is really important. And that's, I think, if you can have those two, you're in a good place to start.
No, that's really interesting.
And then you build from there.
Yeah, two things that you mentioned. Number one is having that view of how are we fitting in the world and who will we maybe not take funds from? Where's the controversy? I never even thought about that, but that could really mess you up. And then also when you talked about who are your contributors, your supporters, a lot of times I've spoken to so many people that have such a heart and a passion about what they want to work with, but then you could say, well, who's going to support you? And they might say, well, anybody that wants to see a cure for this or anybody that loves German Shepherds or whatever. So they may love that or they might want to support it, but are they really there that they can financially give the support that you want? Like, how small is your niche?
Yeah, well, and also,
how do you grow that?
If you're a new nonprofit, and even if you're doing something around German Shepherds or you're doing something like, I've talked to so many parents who have children who've had terrible diseases, cancer
mm-hmm.
being one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And because their experience is so horrific, they want to help people. And that's an amazing thing, right? That they want to take the pain and the difficulties that they've had and actually do something good with it. And that's amazing. But my question to them often is, well, why would I give to you and not the American Cancer Society or, you know, children's hospitals or something that's already established, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you going to, what is it about you, like being that middle person that actually makes a greater impact than just directly giving to a hospital or to a research center or to an existing established charity, right? And mm-hmm. that's a difficult conversation because people, you know, when you work in this space, the idea is you're trying to do good in the world and you really care about something. But I also coach people, I'm like, you don't always have to start a nonprofit to do that. And there's ways and steps. Like, everyone wants to go and establish a 501c3. 501c3s are a lot of headache, regulate and manage. You could start your project with a fiscal sponsor, which is a nonprofit that's responsible for providing all of that support while you just raise money for your project. And you'd be able to do that the first day that you sign up.
Right.
That might be an easier way to transition versus I'm going to build everything from scratch.
Right.
Or
at least a way to get started.
Yeah, or you could be volunteering. You can be a board member of a nonprofit. Nonprofits are always looking for people who care, but people who also have diverse expertise, right? Whether it's sharing not just your dollars, but also your brain power, your capacity, your network, being able to amplify their work. So there's all different ways that people can still do amazingly important and good things without just starting a nonprofit.
Right. I want to take a break, a commercial break here, but when we come back, I have two questions I would like to get in, and one is how do people know that a nonprofit is somebody that they want to support? Like, how can they verify those types of things? And also, we had talked earlier, or a couple of days ago, that there are things that for-profit companies can learn from nonprofits. So let's take a quick commercial break here, and I'll be right back. Now we're going to take this break to recognize one of our sponsors and partners. Women Lead Radio is brought to you today by Connected Women of Influence and our partner, Microsoft. Microsoft's mission is to empower every person and organization on the planet to achieve more. Microsoft believes technology is a powerful force for good and are working to foster a sustainable future where everyone has access to the benefits and opportunities created by technology. Microsoft believes technology can and should be a powerful force for good, and that meaningful innovation can and will contribute to a brighter world in big and small ways. Thank you for your support, Microsoft, and to all our sponsors and partners. And back to our show. Start off with, how do we know it's a nonprofit, like they're legitimate, or that we're going to be supporting some organization that's going to be around, that's going to get past that 10 years or what have you, what are some things that we should look for? How can we verify there?
Well, I think first off, understanding that because the nonprofit sector is extremely regulated, there's a lot of public information about nonprofits, right? So when you're vetting or you're thinking about it, I always tell donors, having been on the funder side where we really vetted organizations before we gave them millions of dollars, one of the things that you have to see is, okay, look into how they're spending their money, right? The 990, which is the IRS tax filing for nonprofits, if they are of a certain level, they also have to have an audit, an independent audit that's annual that needs to be filed. Those are public documents. And you can have access to that. There's multiple sites. You can ask directly from the nonprofit itself. Some of them actually post them on their website. It's always a good sign if people are willing to be transparent and post all of that information directly on their site. You can ask for it directly, or you can go through third parties. Like ProPublica has a free one, GuideStar. Like, you can actually access their information. You can also access technically their articles of incorporation and all of their corporate documents and their corporate, if you want to go really deep, their board meeting minutes and things like that. So you can do your due diligence, right? You can, how much are they spending on personnel? What is their percentage that they're spending on overhead versus their programming costs, right? All of those things you can see. And you can also see if they're bringing in more money than they're spending, or are they spending more money than they have? Do they have a reserve? All of these things, right? That can be really helpful. I think also, who do they associate with, right? If they have donors, other donors that they're working with or they're recognizing, what does that look like? And I think really looking at who's on their board matters, right? What is the quality and caliber of the people on their board? Are they, you know, what are their fundraising targets? What are their events? Do their programs align with what they're talking about? And you can also see that on their, you can also see that on their 990. Like, if they're giving money away to other organizations, you can see how much money they're giving away in general. Through grants, et cetera, it's listed. And usually you can also see who their top donors are. So that gives you at least a picture of the infrastructure. And I think the other piece of it is, any good nonprofit development team, if you are a donor, they should be willing to answer questions from you about where your money's going, what they're doing. If they're not, or they're not prepared, or they don't return your call, or they're not really responsive, that is an indicator that they're probably not organized very well, or they just don't have good donor stewardship, right? If people can't get back to you and you have a substantive question as a donor, donors should be one of the highest priorities for a nonprofit because they're your lifeblood, right? The way they treat their donors, the way they treat their volunteers, those are all huge indicators of the quality of how the operations are run, what's happening, who are the staff there, do they know what they're talking about. If you talk to two different people at a nonprofit and they give you totally different answers to your questions, that's also a red flag, right? It's like they don't have coherency. So, I mean, all of those things can be indicators as you think through and vet, like, who you're going to give your money to. Because let's be honest, I mean, as a donor, you are giving away money, time, resources, network, all of these things in the hopes of doing something impactful. And if you don't feel like, you know, when in business they talk about return on investment, I always talk about return on impact with nonprofits, right? It's really about you're not going to individually benefit financially from donating, but what you're doing is you're trying to maximize and amplify impact and what people are doing.
Yeah, and even that is a really good point for somebody that has a for-profit business, because whatever you're doing, you want it to be impacting someone's life in a positive way. You've worked with so many different organizations, and we only have a few minutes left, but I would like if you could share with us a couple stories of maybe just some projects that you've worked on. That, shout outs and what they're doing and the work that you've done with them and some of the growth that they've seen or expansion they've seen in working with you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've worked on a whole host of projects. I've worked on projects that have been massive with nonprofits that have hundreds of millions of dollars in assets or more. And I've also worked with the mom and pop who are just trying to start out. We do everything from pro bono, low bono to like massive organizations. Some of the more larger nonprofits that I've worked with are like Cancer Grand Challenges, which I had mentioned earlier. They're providing $25 million grants to global research teams to address intractable problems in cancer. And they've been amazing in terms of being able to get the best and the brightest around the world to really look at hugely difficult problems in cancer. One of this last round, they funded some early detection and early cancers. Like, why are younger and younger people getting cancer, specifically around like colon cancer? So they're looking at things like microplastics and environmental issues, and this team is phenomenal, right? And it has people collecting data from all over the world. So that's really cool. And I helped them set up, like I said, their fundraising arm in the U.S., their nonprofit there, and that's going really well. Another smaller organization is SOLA, Afghanistan, which is a girls' school in Afghanistan, which was in Kabul and then had to evacuate to Rwanda so that they could continue educating girls. And they actually smuggled the girls out of Kabul to Rwanda so that they could continue their education. And the lead, the headmaster, mistress, Shabana, is amazing and phenomenal. And the work that they're continuing to do to bring women's empowerment and education to girls from Afghanistan is continuing today, and that, and we helped a little bit with their contacting them and getting them contacts with people who can help with their social media messaging and work around a 60-minute piece that they did. And then another one that I'm, a couple, two other ones that are more close to kind of my personal heart are, I do a lot around food insecurity, so I've been working with Action Against Hunger as their advisory board member, and they're in countries all over the world. They do tons of holistic solutions for hunger and food insecurity, including education, sanitation initiatives, as well as direct aid. And the West Side Food Bank, which is my local food bank where I live here in LA, I'm on their board, and we feed over 5 million pounds of food every year to needy people in the West Side. And I'm helping them with their strategic planning and their capital campaign that they're going to be moving forward on. And then USC's Neighborhood Academic Initiative is a great one, too, which is around education and providing low-income and first-generation kids educational opportunities and pathways so that they can go to college and beyond. So there's great programs out there in all different fields.
Well, I said at the opening of this that you do phenomenal work and that you are really having an effect worldwide. And it's so much more than you being involved with a nonprofit. You are just touching so many pieces, and I'm so impressed with it and so grateful that you are here. To wrap this up, I would like to leave our audiences with a way of following up with you. If you want to share a preferred means, like your website or LinkedIn or social media handles, whatever you'd like, and then I'll wrap
it up. Sure. I think probably the easiest way is to just go on our website. It has all my contact information. My company's website is growinggoodinc.com, and it's G-R-O-W-I-N-G, then G-O-O-D-I-N-C.com. And what, you know, closing is, thank you so much for having me. I mean, I think the ethos of our company and for me, losing my work, is really about the idea of we need to grow good wherever we are. And even if we're planting seeds that we're not going to see the benefits for generations, it's still important that we do that work. And so if I can do little things to kind of push meaningful programs and projects and nonprofits and companies to be able to continue to impact and grow their impact, then it's been worthwhile.
Catherine, I can't thank you enough. Just even the way you say goodbye gives me goosebumps. Thank you so much for being with us today, both U.S. listeners and our international listeners. After our show today, you can listen to Women Lead Radio on all subscription podcasts, specifically Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and iHeartRadio. It's been my absolute pleasure to be your host today, and thank you for listening. Have a great week.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.